This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with congressional candidate Cassie Felder. She's a lawyer in this community, has been practicing law for 12 years, and is making her first run for office. And it's for the 6th District seat being vacated by Bill Cassidy. A number of Republicans are in the hunt for this position, as well as former Governor Edwin Edwards, the most prominent Democrat in the field, and we'll talk with her about the race and the issues as the election is now less than 9 weeks away. Also, Bob Mirabito, the man who heads CATS, he says in his early months there's a success story to tell, and he's here to describe the new and improved CATS system. We'll talk with him about that and more. And now we pause for the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633, your local dial. Outside the area, please call 877-217-5757, inkstershow@wrkf.org, and you may tweet us at Jim Inkster Show. We begin with Cassie Felder, candidate for the United States House of Representatives. Grew up in Hammond, went to Hammond High, and then went to Tulane and to Boston U, and has lived in Baton Rouge for the last 4 years, practicing law. She's been doing that for 12 years. And she is running for the 6th District Congressional seat as a Republican.
Correct.
And Cassie Felder is among many GOP stalwarts who are seeking the seat being vacated by a Republican member of the House. Dr. Bill Cassidy, of course, is running for the United States Senate against Mary Landrieu. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Why are you running?
Well, I tell people that there's sort of a philosophical reason that I'm running, and then the reality that kind of got me here. Being a business owner in Baton Rouge, the minute that I opened my law firm, I wanted to be very involved in the community. My husband and I had moved around a lot for jobs and schools and hadn't had that opportunity. And so I really, really wanted to get involved, and I did that, and I have seats on multiple nonprofit boards, got very, very involved in BRAC, involved in the legislative process at the state level and the local level, and so was considering a run possibly at the state level. And so that was my desire to be more involved in the community, more involved in the legislative process. Mm-hmm. As I started looking into running for office, there were a number of people I spoke with, including Dr. Cassidy, to seek advice. And he mentioned that he thought I would be a good fit to run for this race. Obviously, Dr. Cassidy is not endorsing anyone, and that's not an endorsement from him. He just thought that I would be a great candidate for this particular seat. And so he pushed me into looking into running for U.S. Congress, and in speaking with my family and my husband, my desire to make some changes right now are the reason why I decided to run.
What kind of changes?
So a change back to more of a 10th Amendment states' rights, less of a centralized federal system. I think that it's we've moved so far towards a centralized system that if we don't move the pendulum back to really adhering to the 10th Amendment, we may be lost. And I think that this election and the 2016 election are critical elections. And so that's why I'm running now.
Okay. So you're a states' rights proponent.
Absolutely.
Do you think the Supreme Court in 2000 made the right decision by thwarting the recall or the recount in Florida for the presidential election, enabling George Bush to become president of the United States?
I'm almost never in favor of the federal government stepping in any regard. And now when it comes to the Electoral College issues, they may have some standing there. But for the state to want to recount and the federal government stepping in, no, I wouldn't say that I was a proponent of that.
Well, yesterday, speaking of states' rights, a judge in Louisiana, U.S. District Judge Martin Feldman, who you may know, he ruled against same-sex marriage in Louisiana, upholding the state's ban on same-sex marriage. And this, of course, goes against the grain. 20 other states have gone forward with this. And he writes in his decision that public attitude might be coming more diverse, but any right to same-sex marriage is not so entrenched as to be fundamental. What do you think of this decision by Judge Feldman?
Well, this issue, is, as well as many others, I say it is a states' rights issue, in my opinion. And so if the people, through their elected officials and their state legislature, have decided what they, how they determine the definition of marriage, I think that's where that decision belongs. I don't believe that it belongs at the federal level. And so the judge, I think, is adhering to state law, which I think is the right thing for him to do. If the legislature wants to change the law, then that's where that decision belongs.
So you agree with the decision?
I do.
Okay. 297-5633 for Cassie Felder, who is a Republican, and we will endeavor to interview the candidates, and there are a few in this race. How many have signed up in the
13?
13 of them.
Yes.
And some Republicans who've raised a lot of money, and some of whom have better name recognition than you, but you're doing what it takes to get your word out. How much money do you think you'll have to raise to be a viable candidate?
I think all in all, probably somewhere in the range of, you know, a quarter of $1 million at least. And we're working very diligently towards that goal. Obviously, I know other candidates have raised substantially more than that. But for my type of campaign, I don't think that I need anything more than that.
Okay. And you were in a dispute regarding the political firm. In fact, I think that's the name of the firm that you hired to handle your campaign. And they switch from you to Garrett Graves. What's going on with that?
Well, right now we're just at the preliminary injunction phase. The damages phase is continuing to move forward, but it's a little bit more of a slow process. The one thing that I want to make clear, and I've tried to make this clear on multiple occasions, is that this case is against the political firm. It is not against Garrett. Unfortunately, Garrett has been wrapped up in it because they're working for him. And one of the consultants on the stand stated that they never reached out to Garrett. Garrett reached out to him, and so they've put Garrett at issue. And unfortunately, we need to take his deposition and sort of find out what the timeline is. But the case isn't about Garrett. It's about the political firm. It's a contract issue. It's an unfair trade practices issue.
So you're alleging that you had a contract with this firm, and they illegally, in your view, disregarded the contract and signed a contract with Garrett Graves.
Correct.
Okay. And where is it in the court system right now?
We've had the preliminary injunction hearing that is being appealed currently, and we're just moving forward with the damages case. And so we've got a subpoena out for deposition for Garrett, which is going to be in September. We also have discovery that's out. Some of it's a little bit overdue at this point, but that's we're in the discovery phase, essentially.
All right, 297-5633. 877-217-5757, inkstershow@wrkf.org, if you'd like to inquire about the candidacy of our guest, lawyer Cassie Felder. Leanne writes, I've heard you have a tax background. What would you do to change our current tax system?
Well, it's unfortunate, as we're seeing with Burger King and other large companies who are going overseas, and they say that the reason is a tax reason. It's unfortunate that that's happening in the United States, the place where freedom and liberty are really supposed to prevail. We have the highest corporate tax rate in the industrialized world, and it's driving business away. And so my answer to that, obviously, is simplification of the tax code. My number one answer to that is the fair tax. The Fair Tax is a bill that has been proposed since about 1999. It's gaining a lot of traction. I would certainly like to be a co-sponsor of that bill and help see it through committee. It would be the largest transfer of power back from government to the people since the founding of our country, frankly.
When you say a fair tax, though, what do you mean by a, quote, fair tax?
So it's actually called the fair tax, capitalized.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the bill is, essentially the number one thing that it does, first before it can do anything else, is it repeals the 16th Amendment, which is income tax. In doing so, it would abolish the IRS. It replaces income tax with a consumption tax. And that consumption tax would actually fund Social Security, all of the things that your payroll taxes fund, as well as what the income tax funds. But it's at the retail level. So it's actually for people who are buying used vehicles, for people who are not buying things at the retail level, it can save them potentially a great deal of money. But it also captures a lot of income that we're losing from illegal immigrants, from visitors who are here in the United States. And so it would capture a lot of that as well.
It would be a sweeping change, and sweeping changes are often hard to accomplish. How do you coax the other members of the U.S. House and the Senate and the President and the people of America that this is the way to go?
Well, I think when people see the amount of prosperity that this change would bring, not only to the United States, but to each individual, that it'll be a no-brainer for individuals. Of course, taking power from government is always a very difficult thing to do when you're in government. But obviously, it's electing the right people, people who espouse these views, people who want to make these kinds of changes. That's the way that you do it. And it's gained a lot of traction.
All right. 297-5633 is your number for Cassie Felder. And here's another inquiry after hearing your response about agreeing with Judge Feldman's decision on same-sex marriage. Tim asks about your thoughts regarding the fairness ordinance here in Baton Rouge. Are you for it or not?
No, I believe that in it, when you elevate any particular class of people, that you're doing a disservice to not only the other classes of people, but to that class as well. You're highlighting a difference. And I don't think that that's what we want to do. I think we want to make sure that we tell the world, the country, the state, that we welcome everyone. But I don't think that we need any ordinances or laws to prove that.
This ordinance, though, includes just about everybody else. It includes veterans. It includes discriminating on the basis of race, creed, color, and sexual orientation. So why is that elevating one group above others?
Well, obviously elevating many groups above certain other groups. But the protections are in place under the law for all of those classes of people. And so what it would do is it would cause additional gridlock. It would cause additional probably lawsuits. It would cause additional difficulty for employers. And so I don't think that that's, I believe that's why the Metro Council voted it down. They really foresaw a lot of the problems that it would cause rather than being helpful in the way that I think it was intended.
Well, other councils and public bodies and other places, including some in Louisiana, have embraced this sort of thing. Why are we standing firm in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Cassie Felder?
Because I think that we have a lot of conservative voices that came out and said, listen, we don't need government telling us that we have an ordinance that says we need to be fair to people. We know that there are laws in place to protect people. We just need to show that. And I think that that was why enough people came out and said, listen, we don't need an ordinance that says that we want to treat people fairly. We do that.
Okay. 297-5633. As you can hear, Cassie is a conservative person, and there are a number of those in the race. It would appear that a runoff is destined, and most likely it'll be one Republican in a runoff with the former governor. Are you familiar with him?
Of course. Of course.
What do you think of Edwin Washington Edwards?
I think it's terrible for Louisiana. I've been pretty vocal about that, actually. We have finally moved away from the view of Louisiana over the past 10, 15 years of being a corrupt place where, you know, back deals happen, extortion happens. This is where our leaders are concerned more with lining their own pockets or those of their friends rather than with doing what's best for the constituents and for the state. So I think it would be I think it would be an embarrassment for the state for Mr. Edwards to end up in a runoff. I do not believe that it is inevitable that he'll be in a runoff. And so I'm actually running pretty hard against Mr. Edwards rather than against the other Republicans in the race, because I believe that it'll be two Republicans in the runoff.
Well, the district is such that in normal conditions, if you had an equal number of Democrats and Republicans running, you might be right. But I think that when you've got you and Garrett Graves and Paul Dietzel and Dan Clater and Lenar Whitney, you're dipping from the same pool. And there are some people who obviously will not vote for any Republican. And Edwin Edwards is the person they're most likely to vote for. So I would wager a pretty good amount that it'll be Edwin Edwards and somebody in a runoff, and it might be you. Now, I also would wager a lot that the Republican that he gets in a runoff with will win the seat. But we'll talk more about that and much more with Cassie Felder, who wants to be the next congressperson from the 6th District. 297-5633, your number outside the area, 877-217-5757, back after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. If you'd like to talk to Cassie Felder, she is a candidate for Congress, a Republican, a lawyer, got her degrees from Tulane and Boston University, but has been running a law practice here in Baton Rouge for some time and wants to succeed Bill Cassidy on Capitol Hill. She's an authority on tax issues in this country and says she wants to revamp the tax code of the United States of America and is conservative on an array of social issues, including same-sex marriage. She backs the decision yesterday from U.S. District Judge Martin Feldman, who ruled that the Louisiana legislature is appropriate in its ban of same-sex marriage. 297-5633. And here's a devilish question from Ogden, saying that you were harsh about Governor Edwards. Well, he is obviously, according to Ogden, a proponent of heterosexual marriage, having done it three times.
Absolutely. Yes.
So you, on that score, you probably like our former governor, right?
Yes. And let me just clarify as well that my agreement with that decision is just that I think that the judge ruled correctly that the legislature is where the change in law should happen and that he shouldn't legislate from the bench. And so I think that is what I agree with in his decision.
Okay. 297-5633. And we will take some inquiries for Cassie. If you're outside the area, 877-217-5757. Keith on I-12. Keith, good morning. You're on the air with Cassie.
Good morning, and thank you for taking the call. I try to understand this, and I'm straight, conservative, Republican, but the whole marriage ban situation, I don't understand if somebody decided to call an oak tree a car, nobody would pass legislation, nobody would care. And then they try to say that they're defending the word. It's like you hear about Arabs valuing words more than ideas or other issues. And I don't get the justification. It seems like it's a lie. And you know, because it's really us just hating. It's just hating. Why should somebody not be able to marry whoever they want to marry? It's us telling other people. That's not conservative. That's liberal, saying the government should be able to tell people who they can marry.
Well, marriage has always been a state's issue, so it's essentially why at the end of a ceremony, by the power vested in me through the state of, states define marriage. And so the legislature in Louisiana has defined marriages between a man and a woman. My comment on the decision by Judge Feldman is simply to say, I believe that his decision to say this is, our legislature has made this law. And so as from a judge's standpoint, he's ruling on the law. And if the people of Louisiana want to change that law to make marriage mean something else, then it needs to happen at the legislature.
Thank you, Keith. David in Lafayette. Good morning, David. You're on the air with Cassie Felder.
Yes, good morning to you and your guest. Earlier, your guest mentioned that the U.S. has the highest corporate tax rates in industrialized amongst the industrialized nations. But according to Forbes, that is not the case. Now, I don't know where she got her information, but the tax rate, the corporate tax rate for the U.S. for corporations is 35%, but after credits and deductions, it's only down to 23%. I would like to know where she got her information from.
Yeah, I'm talking about the straight tax rate of 35%. There's an inherent problem, and this is part of the issue that I have with the current tax code, is that there is an inherent problem of manipulation of the code. Who pays and who doesn't pay depends on how much money you have and don't mm-hmm. have. So great lawyers can get people with a lot of money out of paying taxes, while people who don't have so much money are going to pay a lot more in taxes at the same tax rate. They won't have as many deductions. They won't be as creative. That is an inherent problem in the system. I agree with you, and that's part of what I want to fix.
Well, people who file their taxes, if they make money, they quite often, it's a normal thing, they try to pay as little tax as possible.
Absolutely.
Take less miles. His base pay in Louisiana is $300,000. That's what he gets here. And then the other $4 million goes to the state of Texas, where there's no state income tax. Is that smart by Coach Miles?
Well, of course.
It's smart, but that means the taxpayers of Louisiana are deprived of potential a windfall. What's the state tax rate? 7%? That'd be $280,000 a year that would be going into state coffers.
Yeah, I think Louisiana has looked at some changes to its own income tax, to the state income tax, and to the tax system overall. I think that discussion is still happening. I think that we are going to see some changes in Louisiana's tax structure as well. We have, a little bit of a bleed that's happening on two sides of us. We have both Texas and Florida. Neither have state income tax, and it is seen particularly by companies to be much more beneficial.
Barbara Hoffman writes, Cassie, related to the Fairness Act, if laws are already in place to protect the groups in this proposal, why do you claim that to enact the ordinance would increase lawsuits?
Because further protections, so additional ordinances, additional laws, create additional perceived rights, particularly for employment. And so if someone perceives that they were fired because of their orientation or their race, or then it gives additional protections to the employee, makes it much more difficult for the employer, and the protections already there for the classes in the Constitution. The protections are already there, and so we need to I'm generally against more laws for the same issues.
Well, one of the reasons why some people are in favor of passing this is to get it out of the way so we can talk about other things. And there are a number of other issues that are quite pressing in this community. And what do you see as the principal ones that you would address as a member of Congress?
My biggest platform issues are going to be tax reform and regulatory reform. Both of those affect Louisiana as well as the 6th District and the country at large. They certainly affect the oil and gas industry from a regulatory standpoint. There are a lot of regulatory overreaches, things that regulations and laws that were in place that may have once had a purpose that have become so large and so problematic for the industry and very costly for the industry that in regulatory reform would be a huge help to the oil and gas industry. And obviously that's a very large industry in the state of Louisiana and for the district.
297-5633, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Alex asks about the Governor Jindal rejecting the federal Medicaid money under Obamacare. Was that a smart move?
Yes, and I've heard some arguments that say it may not have been a very smart move for purposes of budgetary shortfalls, but I think that the governor did make the right move. I think the more money that we're taking from the federal government for those shortfalls are going to cause additional shortfalls for the state in the future.
Okay. 297-5633. We will go back to the phone lines, but I'm getting a plethora of responses in other ways. Here's one that says, if Cassie is adamant about Louisiana moving away from corruption, this from Brian, and that it is abhorrent that Edwin is running, how does Cassie feel about an elected official who admittedly used taxpayer dollars to solicit prostitutes running for governor?
Not a fan of that either. Certainly, I think that was a big mistake and also an embarrassment for the state of Louisiana.
Well, should have David Vitter resigned?
I don't think so. I think that he was in the office, and although he was found to have done these things, he's got a great voting record. He is doing his job the way that his constituents want him to do his job. And so I don't think he should have resigned, although I do believe that there should be some restitution.
Okay, and yesterday on this show, we talked about a story by Bruce Alpert in the Picayune yesterday about John Breaux and Trent Lott, both former U.S. senators, now prominent lobbyists, working for Vladimir Putin, trying to stop the sanctions imposed by the President of the United States, and working for a bank in Russia that is tied to Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin. Is that a good thing or a not so good thing?
Certainly seems very problematic in my view. And I've said this multiple times recently. I don't think that we're talking about the Russian aggression as much as we should be. Obviously, it's on the news, but I rarely get asked about it. I don't think it's weighing heavily on people's minds as the terrorist issues, border issues, but I think that it is incredibly problematic and could be very dangerous and could quite lead us into World War III.
John Breaux could lead us into World War III.
John Breaux could not, but what I'm saying is I think that his involvement in this is very problematic.
Well, yes. I think many would agree with you. What about members of Congress lobbying after they get out of Congress? Should that be stopped, or is that okay?
I think that there absolutely should be some controls over lobbyists in general and their effect on congressmen. I think that we've moved to a system where lobbyists make so many of the decisions for the congressmen these days. In the ways that they are training the our representatives in the issues in a very one-sided way. I think that we do need to look at some controls on lobbyist effects on our elected representatives, and particularly so from former elected representatives, yes.
So that's a yes?
Yes.
Okay. HB in Denham Springs, good morning, HB. You're on with Cassie Felder. Hi, HB.
Miss Kathy, just a quick legal question here concerning the St. George petition. If they get the signatures, if they're validated, Mariella Pearson says she will file paperwork that will prevent the thing from even going on the ballot. Is this not trying to stop the people from voting and controlling their own destiny? Thank you, ma'am.
Yes, thank you for the question. I agree with you. Yes, if they get the signatures for and they follow the procedure to have it on the ballot, I believe it should be on the ballot. I mean, that is the way the system should work.
Are you supportive of the endeavor?
Of St. George?
Yes.
I see good and bad on both sides. I don't live in that community. I think that the one great thing about the discussion of St. George is that it has really brought the discussion about the problems that we have with our public education system to the forefront, and people are talking a lot more about it and the solutions mm-hmm. for it now because of that discussion.
Are you in favor of Common Core?
I am not. And the reason I'm not is because I don't believe that Common Core addresses what I think is the number one key to better education for mm-hmm. our children, which is teachers. When we begin rewarding good teachers and calling out the bad, that is when we will really see, and at the administrative level, frankly. So, local mm-hmm. control over our schools and rewarding good principals, good administrators, good teachers, and calling out the bad, that's how you change the system. That's what's good for kids.
297-5633 for the articulate Cassie Felder, who has practiced law for a dozen years and got degrees at fine universities, Tulane and Boston U. And we'll spend a little more time with her and then hear from Bob Mirabito of CATS. But Governor Jindal, in scathing terms, says that President Obama is not doing enough to protect Americans and singles out the two journalists who were beheaded by the terrorist group ISIS. Mm-hmm. Is the president on the right course, or is he a weakling, as the governor alleges?
No, I agree with the governor in that regard. I believe that we have shown such weakness that our enemies don't trust us. I mean, our friends don't trust us, and our enemies don't respect us any longer. And people are really pushing the envelope, whether it's ISIS or whether it's Russia, for instance. And again, this is a very serious issue, the ISIS issue, but clear, decisive action. I do not believe we need to occupy any of the Middle East again, but clear, decisive action. I have someone in my network who is in military intelligence who has said very plainly, they have a very clear, very decisive, very quick response that would handle the ISIS problems, but the politicians are getting in the way.
What is that?
He did not say.
Well, I remember the quote from Richard Nixon when he was intoxicated saying to Henry Kissinger, Henry, we're just going to have to nuke him. But seriously, when Americans are beheaded, there should be a strong response, and the president appears to be responding strongly, but not strongly enough for Bobby Jindal. Will you be supporting the governor's quest to become the 45th American president? And maybe he'll be President Jindal, and you'll be Congresswoman Felder. What do you think?
I think that I would like to see how the field plays out. There are a lot of very interesting candidates. I certainly hope that the GOP doesn't make some of the same mistakes that it's made, and that they don't recycle candidates. Mm-hmm. I hope that we have some really good
new people. Do you like Hillary?
I'm not a Hillary fan now.
No?
No. Steve, I know that surprises you.
Stephen on Highland. Stephen, you're on with Cassie. Hi, Stephen.
Hi.
Hi.
I guess no one else is going to say it, so I have to say this. Mrs. Felder, the using of states' rights to deny equal protection of the law, this is nothing but a comically, historically tone-deaf way to be a bigot. There's just no way around it. And this is it's really embarrassing to the state. You say Edwards is embarrassing. I think it's embarrassing that we have people running for Congress on states' rights platform to deny fundamental rights.
My response to that. So I have always found it interesting that when talking about law and governmental responses, the way that a conservative speaks and says, you know, look, this is a states' rights issue, the legislature should handle this, by saying such a thing to be deemed a bigot seems quite simplistic in my view. I certainly do not consider myself to be a bigot. I don't think that you would find anyone that knows me to consider me to be such. Simply by saying that I think that the states mm-hmm. are the right place for these issues to be handled, that just makes me a constitutional conservative.
Who are some of the office holders through the years, presidents or members of Congress or otherwise, that you have admired? We know who you don't like. You don't like Hillary. You don't like Edwin. Who do you like?
I am a huge Ronald Reagan fan, but I'm sure you hear that a lot. Reagan was such a great president for so many reasons, not just because of his political views and his philosophical views, but because he was such a great orator, and one of the things that he was able to do in times that were perceived to be difficult, as we mm-hmm. live now, is to really remind people of the greatness of our country and inspire people again to be patriotic. And he was very, very good at that, and it is something that I admire greatly.
He was a great orator, but what did he do that was good for our country?
Oh, my goodness. So many things.
He raised taxes?
Well, that is true. That's true. There needs to be, obviously, a fundamental change in the tax system. And so sometimes raising taxes is something that you have to do in the current system. And that was, Reagan did have to do that. Reagan was, one of the things, as I just said, that Reagan did that was so impressive was reinstill this sense of patriotism in every American, I believe. That is, in my opinion, his greatest goal, the greatest thing that Reagan did. But obviously, as a president, I mean, he was an incredible leader. He was a visionary. He
More contemporary presidents, since we're talking about presidents in our brief time with Cassie, we've had the last three, Clinton, Bush, mm-hmm. and Obama. Yes. Who's the best of the three?
Goodness. I would the best of the three. It's going to be a toss up between Clinton and Bush, but there are reasons why. I'll explain.
Well, we'll let you explain on our next visit. But thank you, Cassie. Good luck to you, and thanks for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you.
Back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Frank Barnett is producing 297-5633, and our guest is the man who leads the CATS system, the public transportation system in this area, Bob Mirabito, who the early reviews have been quite good for this gentleman, a man who served most recently as chief information officer for the Baton Rouge Radiology Group. Now, Bob, that's not the most likely path to becoming head of a bus system, but you did it.
It worked out well, Jim. I have a unique resume, you know, having spent 20 years in telecom, actually before 10 years in healthcare.
Well, you've been head of CATS now for how long?
A little over a year.
Okay, so it's been, how time goes by. But Let's start with this week. We're going to have a traffic jam, as we always do, and 102,000 people have paid for tickets. Now, whether 102,000 show for the mighty Sam Houston State battle against LSU, that's a different story. But there will be a number of people at Tiger Stadium, and generally that's the worst traffic jam the city has all year. Are you ready?
We are, actually. We've been meeting every day and talking about the changes to Touchdown Express and logistically what we have to do to make it as pleasant and as an experience for our customers as we can. As you know, LSU is doing Contraflow this year. They've also closed down a piece of Nicholson after the game, so the major change for Touchdown Express is that we're limited to one trip after the game, either back downtown or LeBaire's to get our customers back. So we've had to limit our ticket sales this year to 1,000 a game. That's a major change.
1,000.
I don't think that's going to impact the Sam Houston or the ULM game, but for Mississippi State, University of Mississippi, and then I guess Alabama, I think the demand is going to be greater than the supply.
So that will create, I'm sure, some difficulty.
It will. It will create some consternation for our customers. Right now, for example, for Sam Houston, we've actually pre-sold 371 tickets. So right now we have approximately 625 tickets available for general public. And so if we get more than 625 people looking for a bus ride on Saturday, we're going to have to turn them away.
Hmm. Well, how are the new routes going?
The new routes are going well. I think our volume is up about 10% over the same period last year. Our collections at the fare box are meeting our expectation. As a matter of fact, we... on our preliminarily for the month of August, we've had our first best month ever. I think we collected about $120,000 in the fare box. That doesn't include our daily or weekly or monthly pass revenue. So I think things are on the upswing. We still have a lot of work to do, but the indications are over the first 3 or 4 months of the change we're in a better place today than we've ever been.
There were sweeping changes. What were some of the most prominent ones in changing the routes?
Well, we actually changed 19 of the original 20. We shortened them up a little bit because instead of all coming to 22nd in Florida to switch buses, now we have 5 hubs throughout Baton Rouge. So if we can get you to a hub closer to your final destination, your travel time is going to decrease. And we've seen probably a 35 to 40% decrease in travel time throughout the system. We've added airport service. We've added a park and ride at O'Neill. And so I think, the best thing to come out of this transition is that people now see transit maybe as a viable solution to some of the problems that Baton Rouge faces going forward.
What's the biggest misconception about cats?
Oh, the biggest misconception of cats, I think, is that we don't care what the service that we provide. I think that there are a lot of hardworking people at cats who try to serve the customer, whether they're going to work or just going across town. Every day, there's a lot of effort put into providing bus service. It's not as simple as getting in a bus and driving down the street and taking care of a customer. We have people that have issues. Operators have to deal with all sorts of behavior. And while some people may think that's an unskilled occupation, it actually is a very skilled occupation when it comes to dealing with the public day in and day out.
Mm-hmm. 297-5633, Inkster Show at WRKF.org. For Bob Mirabito, the head of the Capital Area Transit System, better known as CATS, and a question from Tracy at the Capitol regarding the transportation management system. Tell us about the firm that is handling this.
Okay, we use a system called Route Match, and I know that prior to my arrival, the system was rolled out, and what the customer saw is a little mobile app, I will tell you that there were a number of missteps made, in particular when it came to rolling out that application. I spent 30 years in the technology business, so when I came in and found out that this system wasn't even tested before it was put out, I knew that we had issues. So basically what we've done is rebuilt the system, and if in fact CATS does everything it's supposed to, that system will in fact work as advertised. But you will be able to see when your bus will depart from that particular stop that you're standing at. And oh, I don't tell Chief Dabity, but every time I'm in my vehicle and I see a bus go by, I'll pull it up on my little Route Shout application and make sure it's working.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when it's not working, Jim, it's a technology issue. Other times when it's not working, it's because maybe the operator forgot to log in. Maybe the operator didn't do their start when they got to their first stop. So there's a lot of things that make that work. And the first thing is we got to make sure that we're taking care of it inside CATS.
Well, the citizens of this area voted for a tax measure in 2012, April of 12, and there has been some consternation, as you called it, about the implementation. How is it going?
I think the implementation, I think, first of all, just getting the changes made from the system perspective, while we hit some bumps in the road, I think it's, again, it's been received well. We've seen the increase in ridership. I think the second thing, and probably most prominent, was where's our bus shelters? Well, putting in a bus shelter is a little bit more difficult than even I imagine. You know, you just think that you could put a slab of concrete down and put the shelter up, and there you got it. Well, there's a lot of applications, a lot of people that have to approve the process. But right now we have our first 10 shelters complete. We expect to have another 30 shelters delivered by the end of the year. So we'll have 40 new shelters around Baton Rouge. We're scheduled to refurbish the existing 76 shelters. That bid is out on its street. I expect that we'll have at least 35 of it done by the end of the year, if not the entire 75. So we're making some significant progress, and we're also looking at the future. What can we do to better serve the public? More routes, obviously. We're looking at alternative fuels as far as buses for, you know, cleaner air. We have a lot of old buses, and so we need to look at replenishing our fleet. So I think, you know, there's a lot going on at CATS, and I think over the next 2 or 3 years, I think the public will see a significant difference of where we were a year ago to where we'll be in 3 or 4 years.
When you took the job a year ago, CATS promised to deliver shorter wait times, more routes, more buses, a functioning bus tracking smartphone app, and shelters at bus stops by the first quarter of this year. Were those goals largely achieved?
Most of them were. I think at the end of the first quarter, we actually on March 30th rolled out the system. On March 30th, the mobile app was reintroduced to the public. The bus shelters, we did not deliver. We are, like I said, we are looking at delivering 40 new shelters by the end of the year. We got 10 already in the ground. So I think for the most part, what we accomplished since I came on board is a heck of a lot better than where it was before I came on board, Jim. So I think the public is seeing a lot of hard work, and they're now starting to get a payback on the tax initiative that was passed in 2012. Mm-hmm. We also added 12 buses. We had them delivered in February. We have another 6 on order that will be delivered next year. And in the meantime, we're looking for additional monies to help pay for new buses. We're looking at the aftermarket for used buses. CATS has, believe it or not, Jim, 45 buses that need to be replaced in the next 3 years. Have buses that were built in 1997. They have 750,000 miles. And if the life of a bus is either 12 years or 500,000 miles, whichever comes first. So we have 17 buses that have already, you know, should have been retired 3 or 4 years ago.
What does a bus cost?
A bus costs roughly $450,000 to $500,000. If you buy a CNG bus, for example, or an electric bus, that's probably going to run you $600,000. So,
all right, so you have 12 new buses. That's, what, $6 million?
That was $5 million is what. And 80% of that was paid by the federal government. 20% was paid from the tax revenues that we received from the taxpayer.
$1 million of it.
Mm-hmm.
Sharon in North Baton Rouge. Sharon, good morning. You're on with Bob Mirabito of CATS.
Hello, Bob. I am, and Jim, thank you for taking my question. I am a CATS customer, and I am wondering why there is no Plank Road number 2 bus that would take you straight down Plank Road from where Harding and Plank are all the way down into Baker and to the Baton Rouge Zoo.
Sharon, I appreciate your business, first of all. And as far as your suggestion, I can tell you that when we had our transit experts come in, based on surveys and ridership numbers, at that time there was not necessarily a demand for service along that particular part of Plank Road. But again, your call and your suggestion, you know, will be looked at now. This is what we want. We want public input. That's why we have public meetings. And that's why you can go to our website at brcats.com and send suggestions to us. Because what we do is we're making major changes twice a year now. And it's imperative that the public tell us where they think the demand for the bus service is besides what we come up with.
Did you have something else, Sharon?
Yes, sir. I've actually proposed a route, and I did that maybe 6 months ago, and it would cover that Plank Road number, that Plank Road corridor. There are many apartments there, low-income housing or moderate-income housing, trailers, people who don't necessarily have transportation. I believe you will find if you go down Plank Road into Brownsfield and toward the Walmart that way, you will have service, people who need service. I saw a woman who had to walk from Harding Boulevard all the way past the airport, where the stop is on Harding at Plank, all the way past the airport flying field to her apartment complex further down Plank Road.
Right. I believe, isn't there a Coca-Cola plant that's opened up there by the airport?
Yeah.
So again, these are things, these are opportunities that we're looking at, Sharon, and we appreciate your input. And we are definitely looking at what we can do up in that area,
right,
because that is a growth area.
All right. Thank you, Sharon. A question from a listener. When is the next public meeting?
We are going to present to our board in a couple weeks. Our board meetings are always public meetings. So I believe the next board meeting is September 16th.
And where?
And it is held at the headquarters of Breck at Florida and, what is it, Ardendale?
Ardenwood.
Ardenwood.
Florida and Ardenwood. Okay.
At 4:30 Tuesday. the 16th.
Okay. 4:30 Tuesday, 16th at the Breck headquarters, the next public meeting. The cost of riding, you've been down this road before, but most people have probably never ridden the CATS bus, but what's right. The cost?
The cost is for a one-way fare is $1.75. Plus, if you have to transfer to a second or third bus, it's a quarter per transfer. You can get a pass for 24 hours. That's $4. That gives you unlimited rides on the CAT system for 24 hours. Then we do have some 7-day passes and 31-day passes. But typically, our passengers are usually buying the one-way fares for seniors. Like myself, and for eligible for students, 35 cents one way and 25 cent transfer.
Well, Bob, congratulations on a successful first year, and we'll talk with you soon, I hope.
Hey, Jim, if I could just say one more thing.
Where we got to roll.
Okay, CATS is looking for operators. So.
All right. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.